Today we are talking to Kel, political cartoonist for The Economist and Baltimore Sun. Welcome, Kel.
It's good to be here.
So what is your real name?
Well, my real name is Kevin Callaher, but I got the name Cal because when I was in high school, my older brother was Big Cal, and I was Little Cal, but when he graduated, I became Cal, so I've had it ever since.
So that's it. Yeah. So tell me about your work as a political cartoonist.
There's not very many political cartoonists in the world today, maybe about 85 in the United States and another 85 around the world, and most of our jobs are very different. And I have a very unique situation where I work for an international publication, The Economist, which is a weekly, read in every nation in the world. And then I work for a U.S. domestic daily newspaper, The Baltimore Sun. And the audiences, of course, are incredibly different. And what they expect is different. So I consider myself a columnist, basically. And I'm using humor and pictures to deliver a point. I tell people that my job is not to make them laugh, but to make them think. But I also feel that as a degree of entertainment in a good political cartoon.
What is the ability of you to cross political lines as a political cartoonist?
Well, I always say that, you know, cartooning is a funny craft because it's a pretty negative art, really. You know, you're always making fun of somebody. Mm-hmm. If you like somebody, you tend not to draw them. You draw the opposite folks who are criticizing them, that sort of thing. And so we deal in tough love, really. In fact, I have a better description. You know, cartoons, we like to use metaphors. So here's a metaphor for you. I'd say that a cartoonist is like a sheepdog, okay? We want the nation to move in a certain direction, but we do not go in front of a crowd of people and wave a flag that says, follow me. No. What we do is we go behind the crowd and bite them in the rear end, like a sheepdog, and make them move that way. You see, so we're always nipping at people's heels and trying to do things. So we're working that way. So it means that, though, I can, as an independent commentator, as I regard myself, is that every side of whether Democrats or Republicans, will always do something innate and stupid. Even the people you vote for always don't do exactly what you would want them to do. So there's plenty of criticism to go around. And so this whole notion, I guess, of crossing the line in politics in some ways is an arbitrary line. Everybody's line is in a different place.
Okay, so that's interesting. And of course, you travel around the world, right? And how do other countries deal with political cartoonists?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting thing because there's actually very few places in the country where political cartoonists can work and survive like we take for granted here.
Mm-hmm. You mean in the world?
In the rest of the world, I'd say almost in two-thirds of the world, political cartoonists cannot draw their own head of state. And, of course, do anything critical. And I have a great opportunity to meet cartoonists all around the world and represent the United States at international conventions and so on. And all the cartoonists are the same. I mean, they all want to challenge the status quo and make the world a better place. But some have better tools than others. And others, of course, are fearful because colleagues of theirs have ended up going to jail, have been tortured and been murdered because of what they do. Is a good example, for example, of a Syrian cartoonist who, I guess about a year ago, had been kidnapped by the Assad regime, had all of his bones in his hands broken because he did one critical cartoon of Assad, and then left to die. He was scooped up and he recovered. He then eventually, because of his status in the Arab world as a great cartoonist, won an international human rights award and went on to go back to start drawing. But it just shows that in those intolerant societies, they see a cartoon as being very threatening because it can reach out and reach the illiterate. And also because caricature, you know, these tyrants and people who are intolerant, you know, caricature is the best way to knock a powerful person down a notch or two.
Right, when you can put them into a funny position in a cartoon.
Mm-hmm. And these guys, you know, they value their power. And suddenly the power is being taken from them.
What is your message to young people, mm-hmm. not just here in the U.S., but around the world mm-hmm. in terms of what it means to draw a political cartoon?
Well, you know, I get sent by the State Department to visit many countries. What I do when I go is I'll go for a week. I have a big exhibition at a major museum. I'll bring cartoons where I'm criticizing George Bush and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. And everyone comes and they laugh. And they think this is hilarious. And then they want to know why I'm not in jail. And that's kind of where the conversation starts. And I inevitably will all go to high schools and universities and talk to them. And, of course, they're very open to this kind of criticism and this kind of world, because they're more exposed to freedom than their parents were because of the internet. Half the world is under the age of 25, and so many of them are wired, have access to it. So they understand that there is this greater world out there, and they have much more hunger and maybe less tolerance for those who try to take their freedoms away. The State Department sees, you know, for example, as cartoons on the as a wonderful ambassadorship for everything that goes on in this country, where people can have different points of view. You know, people don't always have to agree with my cartoons. And in fact, the State Department, when they introduce me, they say, "Well, you don't agree with all his cartoons, but here he is." And the idea is that I think that you're planting seeds in these young minds as to, you know, something to aspire to.
How did you start this as a career?
Well, you know, every cartoonist is a different story. I mean, there's no university for being a cartoonist, and there's no traditional route. So in my case, I would draw teachers in class, which is always a good place to start. I did cartoons for my high school paper. I did it for my college paper. And when I had my senior thesis at university, was a 13-minute long animated cartoon that I did of a comic strip that I had in the school paper. So that was kind of a good place to start. But then when I graduated, I left the U.S. and went overseas to the U.K., leading a bicycle tour of American teenagers. When the tour finished, I stayed, cycled, and then got a job playing semi-pro basketball. At which point, when the team was having financial difficulties, I would go on the streets and do caricatures on the streets, and then started looking for cartoon jobs in London. And my first job was with The Economist, which was pretty shocking, I guess.
Oh, my gosh. And how long has that been?
35 years. It's been a long time.
But it's been a good career.
I have been very lucky because it's a hard these days for cartoonists. Newspapers are having a hard time. As more and more revenue is leaving from advertising on newspapers and going to the internet, as few and few people are reading newspapers, they're shutting a lot of bits down, including firing cartoonists. And when these cartoonists lose their jobs, they're not going to get another one. But I've been one of the lucky guys who's had a lot of work, and I feel blessed.
Wow, that is a blessing. So what do you see in terms of what is going to happen to the media, the newspaper world, and, you know, and your future?
Well, you know, many of my colleagues and many people, you know, are wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth at, you know, what's going on with this new digital revolution. But actually, I'm looking at this with great awe and excitement because, you know, the thing about visual satire, going back to when the first, you know, prehistoric guys were painting things on cave walls, was all about capturing the world that they saw in pictures. And you just use the medium that you had available. And cartoons, as we know them, have really kind of only been around for about 100 years, because prior to that, these commentaries were done in pamphlets that were printed and then handed out. They weren't in newspapers necessarily. And now that we have a new medium, I think visual satire will find a really interesting and happy home, and mostly in the world of animation. Now, I told you I had, you know, experience in animation. I love animation. The potential of it to be able to connect to people, I think, is very exciting. Plus, as computers advance, the ability to create animation fairly fast, which was always the big hang-up before, means that, you know, people will be able to get a daily animated cartoon on their cell phone or on their iPad, and eventually that will be the kind of the new source of satire.
I like that idea. What are some of your favorite political people to draw, but presidents especially?
Yeah, I got kind of two answers to that, because the usually the most favorite person I'm drawing is the person I'm drawing at the moment. And I'll tell you why. You know, when a president's in office, I look at their face more than I look my own face, right? I mean, you think about how time you spend looking in the mirror in the day. That's the only time you see your face. It's not that much over time. I'm looking at these guys 2-3 hours at a go. And then when the State of the Union's around, you know, that's an hour of speech. I watch that entire speech, and then I watch it again because I like to see how their face is moving. So I'm always looking at their faces. And so that the more familiar I get with them, the more you can do with caricature, and you get this really kind of attachment to it. Not that you love it or anything, but you just really can sense and feel it like second nature. And then when a new face comes along, there's the challenge of getting to know it and all that stuff. So that's all kind of cool. But of all the people that I have drawn already – Ronald Reagan had the most interesting face because he had a face. He was an actor. Uh-huh. His face could have many facial expressions. So any facial expression you could paint on him would actually seem to suit him. He also had a lot of very interesting lines. He had this shock of black hair that was so distinctive. If you took that hair and you put it on a ball of string, it would look like Ronald Reagan. I mean, that's how distinctive the hair was, you know. It was good. You know, he was a lot of fun. And on occasion, I get to draw him again, and I'm happy to do some.
Oh, that's great. Well, tell me one of your favorite stories as a political cartoonist, something that you've experienced that affected your work and your career.
Well, you know, I have lots of great fun stories, but I'll tell you a Wyoming-related story.
Okay.
So what was happening is that I was on vacation out in the Bighorn Mountains out near Sheridan, right? And I made my mistake of checking my email. And so I, there was a note from The Economist in London saying, Cal, we really like this sketch that you had left for us a couple weeks ago. And we like it so much we want to put it on the cover. And it was a picture. It was about overconsumption of oil in the world by China and the U.S. And so we had Uncle Sam and the Dragon both drinking like sailors. And they had these big oil drums in there. Something. So they were like drunk on oil. So it was really funny drawing. And I liked it. But they said, we want you to paint it. And we're going to put it on the cover this week. And I went, oh, my gosh. So I wrote back an email. I said, guys, there's three problems. First, I'm on vacation. Second, you know, I'm in the middle of the mountains, in the middle of nowhere. And third, I forgot my paints. All right, so what am I going to do? I figure this is it. So they write back to me, well, see what you can do and get back to us in the morning. So I'm at a dude ranch. So I go talk to the dudes. I go, dudes, where can I find some paints? And so they say, well, you go down that dirt road about 5 miles. There's this little town, and there's a pharmacy. And the lady in the back of the pharmacy likes to paint. Go find her and talk to her. I said, okay. So I go down and find this lady, and she gives me one of these little kids' packs, 6 packs of paints, you know, and one brush and one sheet of watercolor paper. So I go back to the kitchen table of the dude ranch, and I finish up this thing, and then I have a portable scanner in my laptop, and I scan it in pieces and put it together digitally in Photoshop, send it, like dial up to London. It took like 3 hours to get there. But here's the thing, is that right after I finished that cartoon, 2 days later, that cartoon appeared in every country around the world. And that just shows the magic that you can go from, you know, from a little mountain in the middle of the mountains in Wyoming, and you can reach the rest of the world.
That is the beauty of the internet. I love that. That's a great story. Well, thank you for being with us.
Call me back. Come on back. I got lots more stories.
Good. We'll definitely have you back.